Chief, Polly sent me to find you to tell you that there's a bunch of Boy Scouts out in April Bay doing their mile swim for their merit badges. I couldn't call them in. There's no phones out there.
Okay, come on. Get out of there.
And we're gonna need a bigger boat.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 334, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, and I'm here with Brian. He's just chumming the water down away.
Okay, I'm going all in this morning, all just right. Like a naked lady in the ocean.
All right.
Hello, Chief. I'm sorry it took me so long to get here, but I just heard on the news you found my poor baby shark. He's a great white with a great smile. I raised him since he was no bigger than a tadpole. I mean, that's not accurate. Sharks don't work like that, but you get what I mean. We used to swim and sing songs. A baby shark, doo-doo, 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 mama shark, doo-doo, doo. Join in if you know the words, Randy. Doo-doo, a daddy shark, doo-doo, 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 swam away. Doo-doo, 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 when he was three. Oh. I just want you to know that I know that you know. Just you know. And spoiler, he was a she and she was pregnant. Tune in for part two.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. That is the lead into two, isn't it? Two is not good. Three is really bad. Hey, all right. That was really good. You really went all in. All right. Also with us, Randy, I think those old people are not really the kids' parents, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian.
Randy.
Ever tell you boys about the time I ran a charter fishing boat service?
No.
True story. Great money to be made, but you gotta follow the three most important rules. Number one, get into character. In the town where you run your charter boat, you want to come across like a crazy old pirate captain from the 18th century. Number two, always demand more money and always threaten people with certain death if they don't pay up. There's nothing that tourists like more than when you get drunk and tell them they're going to die. I mean, everyone knows that, right? Yeah. Number three, never call for help. If anyone tries to call for help, you beat the crap out of your only radio because that makes sense. Trust me. We're going to need another radio.
Yeah, we are.
Was that
Foley
the
work.
Plot?
Foley work of that one.
Yeah.
Is that the plot to Captain Ron or the movie we watched?
Pretty. Actually, you know what? There's a lot of comparisons to be made, I think. With us, finally, Brian, he likes to huff Old Spice while he throws blood in the ocean, Ibbot.
What was that?
That's how you combat the smell of chum. Yeah. Old Spice and chum.
Yeah, Old Spice and chum.
Captain Quinn probably smells like.
Yeah.
Y'all know me. You know how I earn a living. I'll catch this bird for you, but it ain't gonna be easy. Bad fish. Not like going down a pond chasing bluegills and tommy cods. No, this bugger's meaner. But it's not gonna be a measly 3,000, I'll tell you that. Sure, I'll find him for 3, but I'll hunt him down and kill him for 10. If you want him stuffed and mounted, that'll be another 5. And if you want a commemorative plate, that'll be another 2. The t-shirts are 6. The beer koozies are 4. Keychains are free. Here, I've got one for you and you. Here's the box. Just pass them around.
You know, I understood you way more than Quint. I couldn't understand a damn thing Quint was saying.
Yeah, Quint was a mumbly
mumbly. Bluegills and tummy gods.
That was
seriously
great.
Seriously, if there had been Golden Raspberry Awards in 1975, I hope that they would have at least nominated Robert Shaw. Well, like, I hope.
I had this odd feeling that maybe, and I couldn't remember, but I was 5 years old at the time, so I, you know, who knows, but I had this odd feeling that this guy was nominated for an acting award for this movie, and I couldn't get it out of my head, so I went and hunted down those awards that year, and there was no sign of anything like that.
No.
So it's good. I just wanted to, I had to clear my head and my conscience and everything to make sure that our taste in acting hadn't you know, changed so much since 75 that this was once considered a really good performance.
You know, his big award turn was the movie A Man for All Seasons.
Yeah.
And it's considered one of the greats, this biography of Thomas More, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I thought he was, you know, a great actor. I've always had this impression. I've never seen Jaws before. And now watching this movie, I'm like, who is this guy?
Hit the brakes. Did you just say you've never seen Jaws?
You've never seen Jaws Correct. Till now? Really?
Oh, Correct. This oh is my
your first Jeebus.
Wow. Oh, that's a shocker to me. I don't know why I'm finding that so shocking. That's shocking.
Because it's shocking. That's it why. Is.
Well, it's kind of shocking and not shocking. Jaws came out in 1975. I don't know how I saw this at the theater, but I definitely saw it at the theater. I don't know if they was like rerunning it.
Yeah, there was second runs of stuff. And that's the reason I haven't seen it is because when I was about 10 or 11 years old, there was a third run of Jaws at the theater, mm-hmm. and people were freaking out. I had like parents telling me, you're not going with your little friends to see this movie, and their parents are wrong, and all this other stuff. Like I was
tits in the first 5 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sort all of. It.
Every reason.
Sort of. There were. They were more like shadows of boobies.
Silotits.
Yeah.
Silotits. Titowets.
Yeah. I don't. Actually, but the funny thing about that is, I think. Well, I guess if you count like Schindler's List, that one doesn't count. But Spielberg was never known for boobies in his movies. Like that just wasn't a thing he did typically. But I forgot Jaws had. Yeah. Oh yeah. Think about it. You've only got the only example I can think of is Schindler's List. I can't think of anything else.
I think 1941 has. It's got to have nudity. It's kind of like it's like the Animal House of.
True story.
Yeah, it's like Porky's movie.
E.T. definitely was showing his boobs.
Yeah, E.T.'s boobs are out. All white and crusty.
I think we saw E.T.'s boobs with the Bad Hat Harry guy on the beach.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, Bad Hat Harry. That's what you called him, too, because I thought it was like Bad Hat Harry.
I realize we're all over the place here, but I starting the movie with a teeny bob skinny dip scene is a great way to set you up for this is going to be a horror movie, like a straight horror movie with a monster and people making mistakes that get them killed.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it felt like that trope, right? Like right out of the gate. From the beginning.
Absolutely. But it's done. So, okay. I want to may as well get this out now. This movie is still really great. Like
it
holds up in ways that I don't think movies from 75 are meant to. Like it's way better in the long run than certainly any of its sequels or anything it ever inspired.
And I wrote down a lot of things, but there were three things that I circled over and over and over that I think ultimately make this the great film that it is. And those are the word special effects. I circled that again and again and again. The special effects are just incredible.
They really are.
You can't make a movie like this nowadays.
No.
You would just have visual effects and the shark would look dumb.
You'd have a CGI shark. Yeah.
You might have a tornado. It could be a mix of, you know, they may do some animatronic with some CGI, but you're right. It wouldn't be this very creative use of practical effects that at the time was relatively inexpensive. Their budget wasn't huge for this. So they got a lot done with very little, and it's impressive as hell. Like that shark, even when he's up, like all up in your face, and you're like, well, I know that's animatronic. I've seen it at Universal Studios before they tore it down. Like, I know how bad that shark is, but the editing, maybe that's a big part of this, and it won that. It won an editing award that year for the Oscars. Is so good. Yeah. You never once go, oh, well, that's a fake shark and we're all going to be fine. Like, it's scary as shit.
That's the third of the three things. The second thing I circled over and over was stunts. The actors did their own stunts. They were forced
they did.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
And then boats.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Really good.
And then the third thing was the cinematography. Like there's a huge long stretch in this film where you genuinely feel like three guys took a camera onto a boat with them. Mm-hmm. And you totally forget that there's a director and a cinematographer and so on and so on.
Like, and that's, land. Like,
yeah.
Right
yeah. Behind yeah. Yeah. You totally forget.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really what it has a great sense of isolation. It's I'm not a fan of dark, deep water I can't see the bottom of. It's kind of like one of my phobias. And this movie invokes that quite a bit, which is great. for a movie that was supposed to scare you a little bit. The only complaint I have is actually one of its great strengths, and has always been one of its great strengths, and probably, well, according to Spielberg, it's what jump-started his career, and it was his decision to go with John Williams for the music, who also won an award that year, that won best score that year. But the John Williams that he would become is evident here, even though it's a little more ominous. But so there are moments where it feels a little, how do I put this? There's a niceness to his score that isn't consistent with a bloodthirsty shark movie.
No, there are a few moments. There's a few moments where you get some pieces that almost feel like well done movie of the week kind of happy music.
Pretty much anytime they're driving the boat around.
Yeah, it's a jaunty. Right, exactly. It's a happy jaunty. Yeah.
Right, when the turn comes, when they're hunting the shark and the barrels hit the water, mm-hmm. there's always this adventure, and even reflected in the editing, because the characters start smiling and there's a total switch mm-hmm. of having a good time and having an adventure, and then of course Jaws turns around and
eats them.
Much like I'm stuck with a floaty barrel on, I can't get back down into the water. Can I circle back to something that I brought up a minute ago to get closure on it, so we don't get emails?
Please.
Yes.
1941, also directed by Steven Spielberg, and one we have to do for FilmSec at some point because it's so horrible. from such a great director, it's such a horrible film.
Right.
But and I said, I think there was some nudity. Not only was there a little bit of nudity in it, but it's the same nudity that you get in Jaws. A woman strips down, she's on the beach, she strips down in kind of twilight, dusk, runs out into the water, starts swimming. You hear the music and a submarine periscope comes up out of the water and she's kind of wrapped around it.
That's great.
And it raises her up into the water. I forgot that he parried it himself in 1941.
Lord. I don't want to necessarily see this now. That sounds awful. I've never seen 1941.
Me either. Yeah. Never saw it.
I have no connection to that movie, but I'm all about seeing it here.
It's Belushi, it's Aykroyd, it's... Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that I haven't seen it because it's everything that I love from that time, but I don't know if it came out when I was just the wrong age or something.
No, it's just really bad. Ned Beatty, Zemeckis wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I didn't know they collaborated, writer, director.
It had everything going for it. John Candy, Tim Matheson, Christopher Lee. I mean, there's so many things like, oh, this should be fantastic, and it's just so bad.
I always wondered how later, because Amblin Entertainment produced Back to the Future and stuff. They were the production company. I didn't know what their history was. Maybe that's where they met. He directed it, and boom, there you go. I don't know.
Yeah, because this was just 2 years after Jaws. This was 1979.
Okay. I always had 1941 before.
Amblin is real specifically. It's Spielberg, Kathleen Kennedy, and Frank Marshall.
Right. That's, but what I mean by that is like you would see Zemeckis later. I don't mean partnering in the production company. I just mean his movies were being made under the Amblin banner, and I always wondered if that meant they were buddies. I was always trying to put Zemeckis and Spielberg together because they share so much. Like Spielberg could have directed Back to the Future, and you wouldn't blink an eye. Like that's totally that's totally a Spielberg movie, all three of them really. And the fact that it's not him always made me wonder. Well, do those guys know each other? They hang out? Do they swap stories? Do they nibble on each other's ear in the dark? Like, what are they doing? What are they doing?
Yes, all of those things. Yes. All right.
Here's an interesting thing. Amblin didn't work under only one studio. They worked with Universal Pictures and Warner Brothers and Paramount. Mm-hmm. And their first movie that they claim is called Continental Divide. Mm. Then after that, it's E.T. and Gremlins and the Goonies and Back to the Future and so on.
Right. Wait a minute. Continental Divide was the one where he was out on his own and it was kind of a serious movie? Wasn't that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Belushi, and I think he does something. There is some sort of romantic thing as well, but it's him in the mountains and... and I think it freaked a lot of people out who'd seen John Belushi in all these comedies and were just completely surprised by... Kept doing a serious role.
Yeah, there it is. John Belushi, Blair Brown. Don't know who she is. Bunch of people I don't know. Great. I've never seen it. I just remember seeing that on the posters and going, oh, this is serious him. And this is right before he died, isn't it? Like right around the time he OD'd
or
something?
Yeah, right around, yes.
Yeah. All right. That's a good bummer to start the show out on. Hey, so we got director Steven Spielberg. You got your screenplay by Peter Benchley and Carl Gottlieb. And then it's based on the book by, what's his name? I don't have it here. Anyway, the Jaws book.
I haven't read the book, but.
I haven't either.
But Peter Benchley did the novel.
That's right. That is Peter Benchley. You're right. Yeah, and he also helped with the screenplay. The final scene is nothing like the book, I'm told, but I haven't read the book either, so I don't know how that actually goes.
I hope so. I hope the book has a better ending. Because I was actually, like, this was the only real disappointment in the movie for me. Oh, they blew up the shark? Oh, okay.
It's a great shot, though, you got to admit, even if it feels a little tropey.
Oh, it's just a Death Star.
Totally is. It totally is. You're not wrong. They found its weakness. Yeah. They shot two torpedoes in it, and the Force will be with you always. Totally. I mean, that's exactly what happened, but it's still
also
a great
physically,
shot.
Physically, you know, you can't shoot an air tank and have it explode.
No. They proved this on
Mythbusters.
They proved Mythbusters had a whole thing on this, and they could never get it to do it.
You might cause the shark a tiny bit of discomfort.
Yep. But it's a great shot. Like, there's this moment where he's leaning out with his gun. It's one of the coolest looking images of a guy with a gun ever. And it looks great. So I'm not going to fault him too bad.
Especially because Roy Scheider spends the whole movie playing a guy who's kind of timid. Mm-hmm. And for him to have the crowning moment of badass, that's a trope in this movie.
Oh yeah,
is really cool. Like Dreyfus, you think is going to end up being the little man who turns into the badass, but actually he ends up swimming off into the bottom of the ocean and hiding.
Yeah, he hides. A little fish, little girl fish. Like, I don't know it.
I'm just going to tuck into this coral here.
Yeah.
By the way, the book ends. It's really disappointing, according to Wikipedia. Oh. Brody, now floating on a seat cushion, spots the shark swimming towards him and prepares for his death. However, just as the shark gets within a few feet of him, it succumbs to its many wounds, rolls over in the water, and dies before it can kill Brody.
Oh, that's lame.
Oh, that's cool. Rolls over and dies.
Yeah, but you can see why that's not movie material, though.
It's so not right. Exactly.
It's good book material. That's okay in a book because you can do lots of thoughtful, poignant things about that. But in a movie, you got to show it, and I don't think that works. So I'm with them on their decision to ramp
it
up.
It's all about outlasting, and they kind of had that a little bit in here. It's about outlasting your enemy, and that's kind of how the book ends. But
it's like a war. It's a war of attrition, really, is what that book is in the end. Mm-hmm. And I just think it holds up, man. I really liked it. Like I liked it in a way that made it feel like it wasn't very old. The only time it would shock me out of that is. You know, obviously people's haircuts and the time and everything would throw you, but
clothes.
But there was like some bad, there was some overdub that was a little janky in places and some other stuff like that.
Dude, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially Scheider. I like Roy Scheider and we've talked about him before and he was on our second film sack ever for 2010. All that stuff. But he's really overacting in this. Like he's just Roy Scheiding out the place. Like just
Roy Scheiding it.
Laying the Sequest on real thick.
Yeah.
I felt like Captain Quint was so over the top at all times that everybody else seemed kind of like normal.
Yeah. Once he came on, you're right. I mean, he stole. But people, oh my gosh. I mean, as cheesy and lame as his performance was, people freaking love that guy in this movie.
Oh, yeah. What's your take on sea shanties? I mean, do you like when. The movie has a bunch of sea shanties. Do you guys like that? Do you
like the little singing bits?
Yeah, sure.
I don't mind.
I'm always a little annoyed with those. I don't know why. I've never liked it in books. I've never cared for movies.
The song they were singing, the Show Me the Way to Go Home.
Now that was
not
good.
That's not really even a sea shanty though. That's a
popular song.
Here's the thing. That whole scene, it was a particularly long scene. I was surprised. At how much time was spent depicting them overnighting in that boat.
Yeah.
That scene has, to my mind, the most entertaining and least entertaining thing in the movie. The most entertaining thing being when he and Richard Dreyfuss start comparing wounds.
Yes.
I don't know why, but you could tell they were really enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
Well, and they were acting.
According to the trivia, they did not get along at all, those two actors. And so we may have seen one moment of levity between those two, because apparently through the whole production, those two were just at each other's freaking
that
throats.
That plays well, though, because that's how the characters were, too.
So. Yeah, they say it resulted in the kind of tension that they wanted out of the Hooper and Quint characters. So I guess in the end that works. But they did. It says here Robert Shaw could not stand Richard Dreyfuss. And they argued all the time.
Another thing me and Robert Shaw share in common.
Well, okay, you're wrong. That is so wrong.
Well, now
Richard Dreyfuss is the best thing in the movie.
There you go.
He sounds like Rob Schneider the entire time. He sounds exactly like Rob
that
Schneider.
Laugh is like that too.
I can't wait to listen for him in clips now.
Yeah. even that laugh sounds like it sounds like Rob Schneider a little bit.
The Sharkinator.
And then the worst thing in the whole film is when Captain Quint has to tell this long-ass story about being on a boat in World War II. It was horrible.
Yeah.
I thought that was a powerful scene. I think that is the best moment of Quint.
Right.
I actually kind of
like
it.
You're not going to satisfy me and Randy with sea shanties and long stories. Not going to happen.
Okay. All right.
You keep calling them sea shanties. Aren't they sea shanties?
Yeah.
Okay. Shanty,
I like chanties a lot. Chanties a great way to say it, though.
I like chanties better.
Don't go changing. it's two movies. The first movie is everyone off the beach. Shit.
Yeah.
And then the second.
Almost a political, because you've got the mayor who's saying, no, we got to keep things open so that people who own these small businesses can stay afloat and, versus the cops, mayor versus cop.
Yeah. By the way, if you tell 150, 200, 300 people that are there visiting your shitty town that you need to stay out of the water right now until we get this killer shark problem taken care of because, hey, by the way, it killed a lady and a kid now. I think people are pretty understanding of that sort of thing. And they're not going to go, well, that's just it. I'm going to pack up my shit and leave and never come here again. It's not how
and
it
guess
works.
What? They're going to, you tell them to get out of the water. They're still going to hang out at the beach. And guess what? They're probably going to go spend some more time at the stores because they can't get in the water.
Right.
It's the weirdest, that uncomfortable scene is the weirdest scene of having that mentality of the mass of all of them just sitting on the beach, looking at the ocean, going, I'm not going. Are you going? I'm not going.
Yeah.
And then they make the old man who has his kids and makes his kids and wife who they're petrified. Right, exactly.
Well, now were they
getting the mayor got on that guy?
Were they parents? Were they parents or were they grandparents?
I couldn't tell.
Because everyone that they implied were parents in this movie were 1,000 years old compared to the kids. Yeah.
Apparently,
this was 70s. People in their 50s looked 100.
Apparently, before 1980, if you wanted to hire adult actors, you got people in their 60s and 70s.
That's
and crazy. After 1990, suddenly mom and dad are people who are like 30.
Yeah, it's
and
a
that's
weird
just all
thing.
There is.
That's a really strange thing to me. Like, I was not prepared for that. When they showed up to slap him and say how upset they were about the kid's death, I looked at those two and went, why are the grand? Is it just he was like raised by the grandparents?
Right.
Like, what's going
on
here?
They lived on the beach. Their skin was all leathery.
The guy looked like Lyndon Johnson.
They were in their 20s.
The guy looked like Lyndon Johnson in his final months. Like,
his final moments.
It was really weird. Yeah. Really weird and threw me off. And I thought, man, what a different time.
And why didn't Schneider just throw the mayor under the bus and said, hey, listen, lady, I tried to, but this guy standing right behind me said, no, open the beach back up. It's probably nothing.
Yeah.
Right,
Stick it to the guy who should own the responsibility here. That mayor's a dick.
That was fun. That was a fun character development
that was going on.
Watch
it. My only change
to the script there would have been at once she leaves to have Roy Scheider turn and carry on the slap and slap the mayor.
Well,
here, I got
awesome.
Something
slap
for you just
forward.
Now. Smack. There, that belongs to you.
By the way, this is all good points, but I just realized that mayor character, I don't know if he's the first of his kind, but he would go on to be like the guy in Aliens played by the comedian Paul Reiser.
Yes.
That kind of character.
Forget the danger. We're here. We need to make money and we'll be fine.
Yes. Yeah. Those guys, and they always get screwed in the end. They either die. In fact, it's a little shocking here that guy didn't get eaten by a shark. That's usually the deal.
Right. That's usually their demise. Kind of like what happened to Paul Reiser. Yeah. By the way, that guy, Murray Hamilton, played the mayor.
Yeah.
Mayor of Amity in this film. Also, the priest in the Amityville Horror.
Oh, my Lord. Really?
And Amity means smile.
That's awesome. That's really great. I didn't know
friend. I thought it meant friend. Didn't mean friend.
Did it? Oh, I thought he said.
That's how he. I think that's what he said in the movie.
No, oh, really? I thought he said smile because then he said later on. Then when at the end he was like, when he told him to smile, you son of a.
Maybe he did say smile. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Welcome to Amity.
I couldn't get over the feeling that Mayor Quimby from
Simpsons.
Simpsons was based on this guy.
Yeah, no kidding.
I just felt like he was
like the voice of Kennedy, but the mannerisms of.
Yeah, you know, like totally incompetent and like with a veneer of wickedness, you know,
we've got to open these businesses back up. Yes. Go ahead and take those signs down. Let people swim in the water.
They don't care about the shark. Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh, that's great. That's really great. So Spielberg said this of John Williams' score. He said, when the composer first came to me, that's funny. He said, his reply was, that's funny, John, really. What do you think you have actually in mind for this theme? Spielberg later stated that without Williams' score, the movie would have only been half as successful, and according to Williams, it jump-started his career. So,
well, and also great marketing, because I mean, everything that everyone knows about this movie before they've seen it is this claim that you'll never go in the water again, kind of, you know, don't see that movie or it'll ruin you kind of crap.
Yeah.
This had a real world impact of people not going to the beach too. I mean,
so we've heard. Yeah. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I'm not so.
You think that's just?
I don't know.
Well, here, okay,
at the time, and I was going to California every summer to stay with my grandparents, and I remember there being a big shark scare after seeing this movie. Like, I didn't see it in theaters, so I just heard about all the hubbub. I didn't see it until it was on video. Right. But I totally remember like a. You're going to be afraid to go in the water now. And I don't know if the beaches were less populated when I was out in California that summer or what the deal was, but I do remember hubbub.
I have a vague memory of the hubbub as well. I wasn't obviously in a coastal town, but I remember a lot of talk about it, and it seemed like the news was now reporting more shark attacks around the world. And like, I feel like that was happening, but I was like 10 when I was hearing it, and it was 5 years after the movie. So I don't know. It's a blur, actually. I probably remember none of this right. But that, speaking of stories that may or may not be true, okay, so apocryphal tales about the history of Jaws. Tell me what about this next paragraph sounds wrong to you, because I'm going to read this from the trivia of IMDb. And it's not that Schwarzenegger was almost in the main role.
Was almost Jaws.
It was almost Jaws. It says this. Several decades after the release of Jaws in 1975, Lee Fierro, who played Mrs. Kintner, this is the mom of the kid who died, walked into a seafood restaurant and noticed on the menu there was an Alex Kintner sandwich.
Oh, nice.
That was the name of her kid. She commented that she had played his mother so many years ago. The owner of the restaurant ran out to meet her, and he was none other than Jeffrey Voorhees. Forget that his name's Voorhees.
Voorhees, I know.
And had played her son in the movie. They had not seen each other since the original shoot. Now, I want to point out here, it said several decades after the release of Jaws. Right. Several means more than two. So let's say 3 decades. That's what? 1990-something?
2005?
It's actually early aughts or something. Are you telling me that that woman who played his 95-year-old mother is still around? I don't buy it. I hear these, I see these things on IMDb, and I want to believe them, and I go, oh, come on, man. That's no way that's right.
Easy way. Lee Fierro is the woman.
She's still living.
Yes.
She's still alive.
She was 45. Is that right? No, 55 when she made. No, 45.
No, 45.
She was 45.
She was 45?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm blown away by that.
The death of a child on a floaty will do that to you. It ages you 10 years.
Wow.
Did you guys have those canvas floats like that?
Oh
no.
Yeah.
Growing up?
No, yes. I never did.
Yellow and blue. Mm-mm. Different. Oh.
No, yeah. I never saw that before. So,
like, there was a bunch of stuff for me in this. Like, I grew up on South Padre Island in the Gulf of Mexico, and I kept seeing things that I thought were all wrong. But then things that were so memorable to me, like All Wrong was everybody bunched up in one little part of the beach.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
That was weird. Yeah.
People will spread out. People will walk for 10 minutes to get away from other people before they set up on the beach. That was really weird. But the whole thing where there's a scream in the water and everybody's all staring in the same direction. And then, like, something bad happens and they all run toward it. Mm-hmm. That was so memorable to me. I was, like, freaking out. Like, oh, my gosh, I've been there. I've been in that.
Yeah.
So right. Check this out. The woman who played Kittner, Mama Kittner, also appeared as the same character in Jaws the Revenge. And I'd love to know what the story is, how they work her into the
Sequel. She was 19.
I haven't forgotten.
That was 80. Forgotten, that was 87,
that,
right? 87.
Movie is like a Son of Jaws thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's awful.
Yeah, that's exactly what part two is.
It's awful. The wife.
That's the reason why she was attacking, because she felt threatened.
Yeah.
Chief Brody's widow believes that her family is deliberately being targeted by another shark in search of revenge.
Oh my lord! 1987 was the year for the revenge one, or the whatever,
yeah,
and
like
it was
13 years after the original.
And it's still Lorraine Gray who plays Ellen Brody. She's in that movie too.
Oh wow.
So
I thought she was pretty good.
No, yeah. She's fine. Here's the problem, though. This is a movie where. Whoa, they should have just stopped. Like one of these.
Yeah.
Good, great movie. A titular moment inspired so many things later. Amazing. But you can't go and make shit now. Like, they just made terrible movies after this. They're awful.
Scott.
We've seen three.
Businesses.
we saw yeah, three, so, right? And it was, I mean,
saw
how,
three
how,
with the 3D one.
3D, which was
so bad.
So is Revenge, Jaws the Revenge fourth?
Yeah, I think that was the last one, right?
Hold on. Yeah, I think you're right. And 5 was rumored in 07 and nothing came of it. There was some talk that Spielberg was going to reboot it.
How have they not rebooted this? And we can't say Sharknado is a reboot.
Yeah. I mean, Spielberg is Indiana Jones 5. I mean, why can't
Here's my theory. I actually have a theory about this. There was lots of rumors and rumblings about scripts and stuff, and Spielberg himself either producing or maybe even directing a Jaws 5 in like 2007. That's when the rumors were circulating. It was right around then that the first Sharknado got started on and then released a year or two later or whatever. And I think what happened was that that Sharknado thing happened and everyone just, it was immediately put, it was kind of made in the toilet on purpose, right? It was supposed to be shitty and crazy and over the top. How do you come back from that's how we think of our shark attack movies and make a potentially serious movie about a shark that wants to eat naked ladies on the beach.
Plus, we've had a lot. We've had a lot of that increase of shark movies. I mean, there's like one every couple of years. I mean, it's not like Sharknado. I'm talking about, you know, the Deep Blue. There's all these different movies. That's not Deep Blue. What's the
the other one? I know what you mean.
Deep Blue Sea.
Open Water.
No.
Open Water. Yeah, there's like every couple of years now. There seems to be a harrowing shark tale
last year with the woman.
It's pretty clear that if you want to make Jaws, like if you want to make a remake movie called Jaws, you got to go give Steven Spielberg a bunch of money. And why do that when you could just make a knockoff and call it something else?
Yeah. Right.
Uh-huh. You know,
call it Sharknado.
Blake Lively is who I was trying to remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
WB lady, and she dated DiCaprio for a while. They were hanging out, something like that.
Probably.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Why not?
So when I was a kid, so I never saw the Jaws movie, right?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, when I was about 12 or 13, every summer I would go spend with my cousin in Seguin, Texas, and he and I would just roam the town, and we were free to do whatever we wanted because I had a cool uncle. And we were, his house was like two blocks away from a crappy VHS rental store, and they had every Piranha movie.
Oh.
And one summer we rented all the Piranha movies and watched every one of them. And there were a lot of them.
Oh, I forgot about the Piranha movies. Yeah.
And it really stuck with me. I now know they were flat out ripoffs of this movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
In every way, there were times when I was like, wow, Piranha caught every beat of this movie at some time or another.
Yeah, I'm pretty convinced that that every oh no, we've messed with nature, now what movie has some links to Jaws. Even like Jurassic Park is straight up like him tapping into his Jaws roots, man.
Right.
Like that is just like, well, they're nature's hell holes. Look out. We're all, you know, even though we've meddled in nature and we think we can control it, but guess what? You can't. It's no different than, hey, we've got a beach here and everyone's safe. Oh, giant shark. They were here before us, you know, natural predators, blah, blah, blah. Like that's I feel like Jaws was like the first mainstream successful version of this. And now you could point to almost any of those and say, oh yeah, let's like Jaws a little bit.
Am I the only one who wanted more of the bumbling fishermen all competing with each other?
$3,000.
Totally. Yes.
I wanted the Yakety Sax.
There was a lot of chaos in this movie intentionally to make you feel uncomfortable. And it's one thing that I liked about it. And one thing that I hated about it was some scenes were so full of chaos and so much noise in the background. You felt uncomfortable almost to the point of I just want to stop watching.
Yeah.
You guys get that? Just a little bit too much going on.
Yeah, a little, maybe. I mean, the part where they thought they caught the shark and they were trying to get pictures of it, and that guy just kept yelling, get the guy who took the fish, get him in the picture, and he just kept yelling. Like, that was just like chaos for chaos' sake. But there are moments of, like, tense freaking stares and looks and hearing. And like, when he first figures out that there's something out there and what's his name's working on a knot for, like, 10 hours. And he finally goes, got it. And then
learning how to tie a bowline.
That is a brilliant scene.
That was a sheepshank.
Yeah, sheepshank. That was a brilliant scene. Like, really well-paced. Right. Incredibly well handled. And, oh, gosh. I was way into this. Like, I was watching this last night, and I was not bored. I was not skipping. I was, like, into it.
And maybe it was what he was doing on purpose. Because then when the quiet scenes happened, you really got quiet. Because there was a scene in the movie that was a jump scare that I had no memory of, because the last times I've seen Jaws was always on TV. And for runtime's sake, I'm pretty sure they cut it. And that was when Dreyfus was diving under that one boat to inspect the damage of one of the fishermen. And the dude's face just floats up to the hole, because you're all looking behind Dreyfus like, oh, the shark's going to come up. And he can't be inside the boat, but he's going to come up behind him. All of a sudden, that face just floats to the front, and we all went,
there's an unnecessary noise in there of like, bleh!
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to say to any listeners out there who are an Eagle Scout like me or into like nautical affairs, after this show finishes recording, I will explain to my co-hosts the difference between a bowline knot and a sheepshank. They're very different. They're not the same thing at all.
As long as we're doing a sailboat, Randy,
you don't need to explain the difference. But the boat, the knot that Quint told Brody to make, Dreyfus, whatever his character's name, was a sheepshank, not a bowline.
No, it wasn't. It was not.
Right. I'm gonna defer to Ibbot for right now, because he said earlier that it was friendship or what Amity meant, and I said I thought it was smile, and he was right. So I'm gonna defer to him right now for being right on that point. But I don't know about the knots. I have no idea on knots.
Yeah,
well, that's right. You don't.
I don't know.
I know a shoe knot.
Yeah, I know a shoe. I know how to do a slip knot. That's a good band too. There's a good band. And then what else they got? There's those one kind. Oh, the granny knot. That's an easy one. Everyone can do that. But I was a Boy Scout, and I don't remember any of that stuff at all. None of it.
I do.
I really don't. I wish I did. I think that stuff's cool. Like, there's some pretty wicked ways of holding things, tying things, winching things. Like, it's awesome. Like,
Surprisingly small number. Like, he's there working out how to, you know, he's learning how to make this like basic nautical knot.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, gosh, there's so few of them. You only have to learn like 6 knots and you got them all.
Yeah. Basic Nautical Knot is a band I was in 1985. And, I really miss it.
Randy, I just put in Skype a link to the Jaws script.
Yes, I heard the line in the script. I'm saying, if you look at what he's tying.
Oh, what he's actually tying? Oh, no, he's doing 3 loops.
It is a bowline knot.
You don't do a bowline with 3 loops.
And he's even saying the old thing that you learn as a Boy Scout about it comes out of the hole and goes around the tree and back in the hole. That's how.
Now, that I'll agree with you on. But
okay.
Wow.
Well, I'd say nothing upsets sea folk more than not talk.
I just don't want emails and comments.
Nothing upsets sea folk more than not talk.
Yes.
I want to I want to have that
I'm
written
glad
someplace.
We got past that.
That's amazing.
Oh, man.
Here's another. So here's some more trivia. The three mechanical Bruces, that's the name of the sharks. They were called Bruces. They were all named Bruce, which I think
is
right.
Built in Australia.
Yeah, which I think is great. Especially in 1975 when everyone thought the name Bruce maybe were gay.
Is that name then referenced in Finding Nemo?
I bet. Probably so.
Oh, those three sharks. Those three sharks named Bruce. I had no idea. That's probably true. Oh my gosh, that's great. Well done. Pixar, once again, blown our minds. Anyway, they were made, had specialized functions. One shark was open on the right side and was open on, another one was open on the left side, so they get those two different shots and they're headed swimming or whatever. The third was fully skinned. Each shark costs approximately $250,000 to create.
And look like butt, yeah. Right? According to the... they did some trickery.
Now, here's one that I've tried to find confirmation of. I don't know where they got this story from, so take it as it might be, which could be fake IMDb garbage, but I love this. So, during pre-production, this is exact words on IMDb, director Steven Spielberg, accompanied by his friends Martin Scorsese, George Lucas, and John Milnes, visited the effect shop where Bruce the Shark was being constructed. This doesn't say there were three, so that makes me feel fishy about it. Anyway.
Yeah. Feel fishy.
Lucas says here, George Lucas stuck his head in the shark's mouth to see how it worked, and as a joke, Spielberg snuck into the controls and made the jaw clamp down on Lucas's head. Unfortunately, considering the later technical difficulties the production would suffer, the shark malfunctioned, and Lucas got his head stuck in the mouth of the shark. When Spielberg and Milnes were finally able to free him, the three men ran out of the workshop, afraid they had done major damage to the creature. Now, if that's true, it's amazing and wonderful. If it's not true, I don't know what to make of that. Like, that seems like a weird story.
Yeah, if it's not true, it's another one of these, why did somebody write this story? Why would they make that up?
Yeah.
It's gotta be, fiction. And if it's true, it's going to totally be in the director's commentary on the disc, which I thought about watching since I'd seen this before and I have the 30th anniversary special edition. I thought, you know, maybe in this case I'll listen to the director's commentary, but I just got so within the first minute, I was just so caught up in watching the regular Jaws. I just watched regular Jaws.
Yeah. Your special edition is 12 years old. You know that?
I know.
Your 30th anniversary has a 10-year anniversary last couple years ago.
It's actually DVD. It's not even Blu-ray.
All right, Grandpa, bring in your old formats.
Right, exactly. Did you guys notice, by the way, the transfer on this on Netflix? When it's when one of the barrels is in the water and it goes around the front of the boat.
Oh yeah,
it's like some weird blue flickery.
Yeah, there were three different artifacts. Shots with that. Where what they had done is they had taken a daytime shot and then darkened everything.
Oh.
And so the barrel had a flashy light on it.
Yeah.
And whenever it would flash, it would reflect off the water, but then they darkened everything. So the reflections looked like bizarre.
This shows how dumb I am, because I thought that was some sort of beacon. Like in my head, I'm like, oh, they've put some kind of tracking, blinking blue beacon light on there. And then I was fine with it. But now that you describe what you're saying, oh, yeah, they probably, that was a little fishy. I keep saying fishy. I shouldn't say fishy. It's real dumb.
It's a little fishy.
It's a little dumb that I say fishy. The shark only had 4 minutes of total screen time, so $750,000 worth of animatronics, 4 total minutes of screen time. So there you
go. Which in today's dollars is like $50 million.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for this sort of thing. Oh yeah. And you would have seen, I mean, it's funny. It's almost like the practicality of the effects and the budget and all the restrictions of the time served the movie better than it would have today. Because if you'd have made it today, you would have had sharks left and right because you just CGI that shit and it's all done, right? And you could do as much screen time as you want, and you would have overdone it. Like, they would have overdone it. And this was a way of them not overdoing it, keeping it small. I really like that, you know? Like, I like how minimalist yet not. Like, when he's in there doing the autopsy and you think that, what's his name, going to yak or whatever, he's working on that girl. And part of what makes that so unsettling is not only his reaction, but they're not really showing anything. They really don't show anything.
Acting. And this is where we have to talk about what made Scott want to vomit while watching the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be Richard Dreyfuss pretending that he is getting stinked out by pulling stuff out of the belly of a shark,
nope,
right?
Like, nope. That one did not bother me at all. That just looked
not,
like...
Not when and he you releases know what? The milk.
No. And it wasn't until... Oh, the milk that comes out of it. Yeah. It wasn't until somebody brought this up on Twitter that I thought, oh, that's of course the thing that Gross got up the most.
Huh. When interesting.
Richard Dreyfuss is making faces behind Quinn's back, and he's sticking his chummy shark gloves in his mouth to stretch him out and go, blah, blah, blah,
yep.
with his tongue.
You nailed it. That grossed me out. When he made fish fingers to make faces at Quinn.
Making the fish fingers.
All I could think of was, dude, those are covered in chum with a light scent of, what's it called? What's the
Old Spice.
Old Spice on there. Like, oh, that is disgusting.
So, I didn't understand. Maybe I'm not sea folk. I didn't understand the Old Spice into the rag. I mean, was it really Old Spice, or did he have something kind of concoction in there that was something
else? No, I'm guessing
else?
It was Old Spice. I'm guessing it's just like what they do with...
I can't imagine. I can't stand to stand 20 feet away from somebody with Old Spice. I can't imagine throwing on a rag and then preferring that up my nose.
Oh, I'll bet when you're faced with either chum or chum that is slightly masked by Old Spice, you'll pick the Old Spice.
Oh, I don't know,
nine
man.
Times out of 10. It's kind of like what they do, you know, when they do an autopsy, how they stick the Vicks under their nose.
Yeah.
Just I can see
sort
that.
Of things
yeah.
like,
yeah.
All
this
right.
is a horrible idea. Doesn't that open your nasal passages? Terrible.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Like totally. Makes your sinuses clear. So you can whip it every.
The way
it's
I
weird
look
to think
it.
How only 40 years ago people just accepted these horrible, horrible choices when it came to cologne and perfume.
Right.
That was the best they could do.
It was really the best they could do. That was considered high living right there. That stuff.
It's flip flops. Every generation hates their parents' smell. So
No. We also hate this generation's smell when it comes to Axe.
Yeah.
But, well, Old Spice is back, man. Kids
well, look,
love it.
When I was younger, the only thing I ever used Old Spice for, my dad had a whole one of those bottles of it. Looked just like that yellow bottle of it. And I took it and made movies with my Star Wars figures and my Star Trek figures, and I covered them in Old Spice and sent them on fire for the effect shots.
Okay. I thought it was silly smell better. I was like,
No. It was like, that's how I have. I still have this.
They're going
I still
out
have
of a date tonight.
I still have an action figure of James T. Kirk from the Star Trek, the original motion picture. Where he is like burned past recognition, but still Christy whole. Kirk. And I called him Burnt Kirk, and I still have him.
Burnt Kirk.
Yeah, he's the best. And I got that from Old Spice. And
Scott, what?
I think it was Old Spice. I mean, what was the other one that was popular? There was one other one.
I don't know. Cologne had a lot more alcohol.
My grandfather.
Polo was huge. Yeah. But that was,
my grandfather,
been,
that was our generation.
Later. Yeah.
I can't think of it.
My grandfather wore Old English, which was invented in 1949.
Wow.
And he wore it every day of his life. And I wish he hadn't. And I always want to tell people, like, one day you're going to have grandkids. Scott Johnson, Brian Ibbett, Brian Dunaway. Mm-hmm. One day you're going to have grandkids. Don't do this to them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give them these warm, wonderful memories that are all bound up in a shitty smell. Mm-hmm. Just be clean. That's all you need to do. Right. Be clean.
Yeah.
There was Aqua Velva.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes,
yep.
That was
high karate.
Some Aqua Velva.
There was an axe thing going on here for a while with Tristan, but he totally grew out of that really quick.
I might be thinking of Stetson or Brute. Maybe I'm thinking of
probably Brute. Stetson was in our generation, like the Polo generation.
Yeah.
So what do we think Quint smells like?
I think smells like chum and Mold Spice, man.
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible.
More like mold
just
spice.
Looking at him, you could smell him. You could smell how dirty he was.
Yeah.
And whiskey.
And whiskey.
And whiskey.
And just, I don't know. Anybody who lives like that and is at home in his lifestyle, they freak me out, man. Like, if they're real people like that, there's more going on. Like, if they smash their radio.
Yeah. He's definitely got a Jeffrey Dahmer vibe because he's like boiling shark bones in the, like, everywhere.
Yeah, like I was trying to find out who are the good guys and who are the villains in this movie. So like the mayor is obviously a villain, right? The shark is a monster, so it's not really a good guy or a villain. It's, you know, it's got its own plans and stuff, but it's not like I guess it was portrayed supernaturally.
Right. But you know, that's what Richard Dreyfuss, you know, explains. It's like, yeah, it's just what they do. We've forced it into this situation and now we're reaping what we sow.
Exactly. And so that's why you kind of can't really feel, it's not like the shark is hunting for anger or sport or revenge or whatever.
I don't know.
once they start poking the shark with harpoons, it seems like it gets pretty, you know, anger and revengey.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
Well, yeah, if you're poking it with,
yeah, with two.
Right. Oh, did anybody think it was a bad idea when Richard Dreyfuss threw that that shark tank over the side?
And yeah,
just right in the shark cage.
Yeah, it looked real flimsy to me. It looked like garbage crap. Like, you already know what this thing's capable of. You can't seem to get it in any of the traditional ways. It pulled your freaking winch right off the side of the boat. You think your little aluminium shit box is going to do any good?
And by the way, they didn't work out a good signal for pull me back up.
Right. No, they did not.
Right. It's not like, I mean, the water is not so murky that they can't see that the shark is like ramming its head through the bars. Yeah. And it's like, what are they doing? Are they like off looking and saying, oh, yeah, I sure love this time of day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brody, pass me another whiskey. Yeah. I mean, they're over there. They should be able to look down and see, well, here's the shadow of the shark. Oh, look, it's ramming the cage. I don't know. Maybe we should pull him up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was so pissed off at them all through that sequence.
Yeah. I can't believe, but that's what you're supposed to feel in a good horror movie, though, right? You're supposed to be pissed off. They're doing stupid crap.
Don't split up and check the basement and the attic.
I know that they have.
It was a group.
They have to, you know, they have to try whatever's left. And what was left was, basically what it came down to, and I don't remember this when I first saw it, but all of Quint's methods had failed. Like all of the old-fashioned pirate man stuff stopped.
He had tied all the knots he could. He had sang all the sea shanties. He had done everything.
Yeah, he'd done everything. So by the end, he was like, well, tell me what your fancy science will do. And then that's when that kicked in. And when you realized what needed to have happen to make that work was a shitty cage and fumble fingers McGillicuddy down there with dropping the spear.
Drops it. The first thing he does is drop his only weapon.
I know. The only reason he's in there, the one thing you need to grip.
Take the cork off and, oh, no, it's all gone down.
Yeah. He always, it was weird that he laughed after. Oh, no, that was earlier in the thing. Okay. Never mind.
I do find that I totally identified with Dreyfuss only. He was the only character in the movie that I identified with.
Really?
That I felt like I could end up being that guy, you know, but.
Interesting.
I also, you know, I went to college for natural sciences. Like I hung around with a lot of people who were studying marine biology and they were kind of like him.
No, I think that's why he exists in the movie. I think he is the guy we're supposed to relate to. It's the guy I related to. Like
I felt more like Brody. I felt like new job, you got to figure it out and you're not sure what to do. You go down to the Amity library and get a book on sharks, try to figure that crap out.
You're in a little town that's the busiest city in the world.
Yeah. Well, it's 4th of July weekend. You know, things are going.
Was anybody else bothered by that? Somebody literally says the season hasn't even started yet. Oh, my God. Right. There's a million people in this little town.
Right. It's a vacation resort. Yeah. So, I mean, that made sense to me. Why not?
Well,
but Randy really related to Quint, if my understanding is correct. Right, Randy?
I did.
I mean, yeah. No, you said Dreyfuss.
Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah. You know, Randy Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Randy Dreyfuss.
I was trying to figure out why he was there at all. Like, I think it is because we're supposed to relate to, or at least there's a bunch of the audience that are just like bookworm nerds that don't go out on the water for anything like me and don't know how to tie a knot. And we need a guy in there that we can feel like, oh, okay, well, this is how I'd be. And I would clash. I would clash hard with this weird fish man.
And he's the protagonist because he's got the primary Achilles heel. He's the one that doesn't want to go into the water.
Yeah,
you know he's got to overcome his thing.
Yeah,
his
thing is he's rich. He doesn't need to be doing this, but he feels compelled to do
about
it.
Hooper.
Yeah, you guys are talking about two different people.
Yeah, we're talking about different people. Right.
Yeah,
but right. But for me to relate to, I don't know. I guess we're supposed to sort of relate with Scheider. He's our hero, right? He's our guy,
right?
But I don't know. I never do. Actually, I just never do with him in general. It might be him as an actor, and it's fine. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Just never. He never rings like somebody I would know.
It's those huge glasses.
Maybe, yeah. Right. Those are pretty. They're pretty big.
He's wearing enormous glasses this whole movie.
Well, all the peripheral vision. He needs it for shooting shark while they have a thing in their mouth. So you gotta have.
I think it may more relate to Pippet.
Pippet?
Yeah, Pippet.
Pippet. Pippet.
Who's Pippet?
Pippet.
You remember Pippet, the dog that disappeared? The dog in the bucket. I mean, the black dog swimming around the whole first
part
of
the movie. Yeah. Yeah. Like the dog's in the shark.
Right. Yeah, dog's in the shark.
Yeah, well, I always assume the shark ate the dog, right?
Wasn't yeah, that, I'm assuming yeah, so, yeah. But we never really get any closure because we didn't see no little doggy leg sink to the bottom of the ocean like also, the other people.
Also,
so.
Why do they call that other area of the inlet there? They called it the pond.
The pond.
Yeah.
The pond, yeah, because it was, the, yeah, cause it was, right. It was supposed to be isolated.
It was, yeah, closed off.
Well, yeah, but you can still, the shark can get in there. I mean,
apparently.
I don't know why they thought, oh, hey, all the kids and old people, make sure you're in the pond because...
He free-willied that thing, man. He just went right over there, man.
They're probably thinking it's too shallow for him to go into or something. I don't know.
Yeah. His sinking...
Well, most shark attacks happen within 3 feet of water.
That's true.
That's true. I heard that recently.
Mm-hmm. The sinking bloody leg of that guy out there in the shallows was... Pretty oh, yeah. That was pretty
good. That's a good effect. It was like, yeah. It looked like a real foot.
Yep.
It was all. It was cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't the sound I was thinking of, but yeah.
Right. Well, you know, it's kind of wavy and kind of, it didn't look stiff or anything.
Right.
It looked really mm-hmm. like it just fell off somebody's leg.
Oh, by the way, so we had a runner up to the grossest thing in the movie, but it's the gross. Oh, yeah. It's one of the grossest things in life. And I can't stand it when anyone does it in real life or in movies. People that spit into their goggles. And listen, you don't need to email me and tell me why they do it. I know why they do it. I understand it. I spent some time in scuba dive class stuff. I know. I get it. Yeah. But it's gross. It's freaking gross to spit in your goggles.
I don't want to see it.
Oh,
okay.
It's foul. I hate it. So when he was spitting in his goggles, he said, I don't have enough spit for the goggles. I'm thinking, good, because that's disgusting, and nobody should be spitting in their frickin' goggles. I mean, I hope that by 2017, by the way, we have goggles that don't need spitting.
We do.
Okay.
Do we?
Fine.
Because last time I went scuba diving a couple years ago, I still had to spit my goggles.
No, you didn't have to, but you just wanted to.
I wanted to.
Just a couple of months ago, I went and rented some snorkel gear in a dive shop in Hawaii, and they gave me gratis. They gave me those little drops that you put in.
Oh, bottled spit
inside your lens. And it is not bottled spit.
Maybe,
but I want
anyway,
it to
just,
be.
Just rub that in there, and it's great.
Yeah,
goggles don't fog up.
So can they? Let's just answer the question we sort of brushed. Can they make a Jaws sequel? Or a new Jaws movie in a post Sharknado world? Is it even possible now?
Absolutely.
Totally.
Okay.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, if they're able to do this with, like we said, the shallows and open water. Open water was, that was a freaky movie. Yeah. You know, Tina and I sat and watched that and we were like, all right, well, you know, they're going to be whatever, floating and
treading water.
Treading water with the whatever jackets, life jackets on and stuff. And holy cow, that thing is so damn tense and freaky. It's really, really good, and they could totally do that with a true shark movie, Jaws style movie.
Is this a moment when we can talk about the Oscars, guys?
Yeah, if you want to.
Sure,
that's this weekend.
I just, I'll tell you what I watched last night.
Yeah,
everybody listening to this is hearing this after the Oscars, but we're recording it just before the Oscars.
Right,
and I just want to bring up. There's like a lot of things that really stuck with me this year. But
actually, hold on a second. Let me just correct that. They will actually hear this right before. They'll get it tomorrow, probably a few hours before the Oscars.
So, oh, really? Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So I can make my prediction that La La Land is going to sweep. Yeah, okay.
You totally can. Sorry, Randy. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead. Continue on.
It's a good prediction, Brian. You're probably
really going,
right.
Really going out on a limb, aren't I?
Yeah. You're really counting on the voters to do what they never do. The thing, many things really stick out this year. Like if you watch these movies, you're going to be like, you're going to never forget the score for Arrival or whatever. But this one thing that really got to me, and that was in the movie Hell or High Water, there is a bunch of these scenes that are full of this tension that it's really hard to portray on film. Like there's a scene where Chris Pine is running from the law and he has to drive through a roadblock, and these state troopers are investigating and trying to figure out if they need to keep him or let him go.
Is he playing sabotage?
It's the most tense freaking scene ever. And watching Jaws reminded me of some of that. Like you may or may not be able to thrill me with action, but if you can construct tension, I am so entertained.
Mm-hmm. You can't thrill me with action, Randy says.
Yeah. May or may not.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
That's what I said. Right. You may or may not. Like, action sometimes wins and sometimes doesn't, but tension, damn.
Yeah. Tension wins every time.
Last night I went out to a theater to watch all of the, so here's the deal. We were heading out to the theater. Some friends called us and said, hey, we're going to go see all the live action short films tonight. They've got a theater thing where they're showing all five of them. And I was like, oh yeah, I really want to see those. That's great. So we get there and we get there before them. We get there and they're running late. So we know that they're going to be walking in just as the house lights are going down. So we get there and we buy our tickets and he says, now, you know, these are the documentary short films. I'm like, oh yeah, of course I knew that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And inside I'm going, oh man, because I really wanted the dramatic short films. Yeah. So we get our tickets and here's the deal. Five of them, three of them focus on the Syrian refugees.
Wow. I didn't know that.
You have one that deals with a Holocaust survivor who's giving up a violin. You've got another one that's in the serious, not ICU, but basically a busy hospital. And it's basically the area where everybody goes and they have to make the decision. All right, do we pull you off of life support and let you die? Mm-hmm. And then you've got three Syrian refugee stories about Aleppo and the crap, the horror stuff that's going on there. I felt like my heart was ripped out of my chest five times, stomped on the floor, and then you got end credits. And then another one comes. I texted Scott and I said, I felt like I just watched Manchester by the Sea five times.
Oh man.
I love that. I love it.
I just want you to know if it's still a possibility for you, you can go to Amazon and search 2017 Oscar nominated shorts and you can rent and watch the whole group of them. Mm-hmm. It'll take you 2 hours and 15 minutes. That's how long all five of them are back to back to back.
Yeah.
And unfortunately it's going to cost you $20, but it's a very good $20. Very well spent.
Well, it would cost you that
$12.99 on Apple iTunes.
Oh, that's even better. That's even, yeah, better.
Even better.
So that's cheaper than me trying to track that's a theater down.
That's cheaper than one ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. $12.50 for that? Or $12.99 for that?
$12.99
for the one on Apple iTunes.
And that's all the animated shorts.
No,
that are
up. No,
no,
live action.
The live action shorts,
but the drama
two of
ones.
The animated, that, yeah, two of, exactly. Two of the animated shorts aren't available to even be shown in the US yet unless you go to a theater, so you can't even get them on demand. But a couple of them on Vimeo, and if you saw Finding Dory, you already saw one of them. You already saw the one that's gonna win.
That's true.
I hope after you watch these movies that you root for Silent Nights. It's the Christmas short out of Denmark. It is good.
Can't wait to
see
it.
Good. I love foreign animated films. It's one of my favorites.
And I'm going to predict the one about the Syrian refugees is going to win.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably going to be, there was one called The White Helmets, which is about a group of rescue volunteers who've been saving lives in Aleppo. Basically, they watch for the air raids and drive to wherever everything's going on. And while the dust is even still in the air, they're in there pulling out people out of the rubble. And God, they were all, it was all really powerful, really worth seeing.
I think I'm rooting for Joe's Violin. What did you think of that movie?
Oh, it was very sweet. It's about a Holocaust survivor who gives up his violin and it goes to an inner city kid.
Yeah.
In a school for girls where everybody learns the violin. That was the lightest of the five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was going to say, it sounds like some heavy viewing, man.
We're all super heavy, but that was super sweet, and I think it's it might just be too sweet in the face of all of these other really powerful ones.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing.
That was the one that made me cry, though. That one did make me cry.
Oh wow!
That's why I'm rooting for it, because a movie like Extremis, which is just brutal.
Yeah.
Like, who's voting for that? Like, I thought it was wonderfully well done, but it's brutal. It hurts.
It is.
And watch.
There's no. The problem with Extremis was that there was no the only thing you learn from it is that, boy, you better tell your family while you can what you want done if you have to be on a respirator or life support or whatever. Let them know now. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Let them know now, because all these people are in situations where nobody knew what their real wishes were.
I know what it is. Unplug that shit. That's what I want. Get me out of here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, You better write it down and sign it.
I will.
I'm going to listen to the podcast now.
I say give me at least a week. Don't be getting too anxious.
Give me a couple of days.
Chance to rally.
Yeah. I'm going to rally. I'm telling you, if you've got me in some terminal deal and there's no way out of it and I'm on some respirator, let's it's good. We had a good life.
Give me a day or two, okay? I mean, you unplug me, but you know, don't get too anxious.
That's true.
Does anybody have a favorite film to beat La La Land? Anybody?
I want Hacksaw Ridge and I haven't even seen it, but
Hacksaw Ridge is so good.
So bloody.
Yeah.
Oh. It's gory, but it's powerful.
It's blood. It's gorier than Jaws.
Well, Jaws isn't all that gory, so that I don't feel like Jaws is that gory. It's okay.
What?
I mean, it's okay on the gore factor. I think Jaws is a lot more about what you don't see. The goriest moment is probably Quint getting eaten. Other than that, what else? It's a lot of fake blood.
Dismembered heads and legs and
yeah.
It's very gory.
Even the woman on the beach, you just see like a bunch of seaweed and crabs.
Yeah, I don't think that movie's all that gory. I think that movie plays on
left of her is her crabs.
I think Jaws plays on your imagination is what it does.
And there's no way. I mean, an eating machine like a shark isn't going to leave that much meat.
Yeah. I mean, if you're telling me that if it's gory in the way that other Mel Gibson directed films are gory, well, that's gory. Like I would say, you know, if it's like Braveheart gory, well, then that's gory. If it's like the Jesus movie gory,
yeah.
It's got a couple of these, like, why did you have to show me the brain being exploded into the face of the other guy kind of shots? Like,
wow. Yeah.
I don't understand why this is in this movie. I was there before I saw something I can never forget, you know, like, I won't be rooting for Hacksaw Ridge, but I
Lion
will be rooting
the only
for
other
Hidden
one.
Figures.
Hmm. Oh, Hidden Figures is good. I feel like it's a great movie. It belongs in the Best Picture list, but I feel like it follows a very standard formula for a movie of that style. You know?
That standard formula won Best Picture last year.
It's true.
Like it's
true. But La La Land's gonna win, dude. There's no way. That thing was written for Hollywood. Hollywood loves it. They're gonna smell it. They're gonna
I think if there's a La La Land upset,
it is voted
it's
by
Lion.
Those peers.
You think Lion's the upset?
I think potential? Lion is the possible upset one.
Oh,
I think,
weird. Ooh, that hadn't even occurred to me.
Lion is amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Sure, but it never occurred to me. Like, there's an honest trailer where Z Frank. Runs down all of the Best Picture nominees. Watch that thing.
I'm sure it's great.
Best thing to happen this winter.
I love
on
Z
the
Frank.
Internet.
Z Frank is great.
Honest Trailers Oscars 2017. Watch that. I don't even want to tell you what the jokes are.
Okay, all right. The only other thing I would say is if I had to really pick one because I just also because I saw it is Hell or High Water is a real special spot for me. I love that movie a lot. Mm-hmm. So if that it's never going to win, but I want it to win. I loved it.
It's got the best portrayal of an old waitress that has ever been committed to film.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You're not wrong about that. You're not wrong.
I thought about you, Scott, during that sequence where they're sitting in this diner and this old waitress is mistreating them. I don't know why. I thought about you.
You thought that either, but that's cool. I like that. I like that I'm being thought of in those circumstances. all right. I think we should get to some clips. We got clips, and we'll have more to say at the other end of the Oscar stuff next week, everybody. So, or not next week, week after next, because next week we're doing a live sack. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll explain all this. But for now, I've got some clips, and they begin with this one. It's this one here.
I can swim.
That's the starting of all this. I can swim.
You're so high
drunk
and
kid.
Drunk.
Yeah, that kid.
I can totally swim.
I can swim.
All right, great. And then we got.
I liked that guy.
I love that guy. The fact that he survived by being
too drunk to swim.
To die.
Yeah. Here's one that I wrote. Actually, sounds horrible.
It hurts.
Oh gosh, dang, dude.
I'm not always a fan of the explaining. The pain, I don't like it.
The bees.
This hurts.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that, but it was okay here.
Yeah.
I think that I don't see a shark playing with her that long before he just says chomp in half.
Yeah.
But it was scary as crap, though.
Let's go left. Let's go right. Whee!
Yeah. But it was effective visually. But yeah, I'm with you. It's like that what happened.
I like that the shark is conveying a wee sensibility.
Wee! This is fun. Are we having fun yet? That goes back to my theory that the shark's not all bad. Mm-hmm. Not all bad. Yeah. Just trying to play.
No, he just wants to play.
Yeah. All right. Does this bug any of your senses to hear this sound? So this is Quint's. This is Quint coming in the room. Here you go. Oh my gosh.
Oh.
How am I even doing this to myself?
Yeah.
Oh my lord. Okay. So some people aren't bothered by fingernail chalkboard at all, but I am. I hate it.
I'm totally bothered by it.
Ooh.
It's like nails on chalkboard to me.
Yeah. Here's this guy.
Find him for three, but I'll catch him and kill him for 10. You got to make up your minds. You want to stay alive and ante up? You want to play it cheap? Be on welfare the whole winter.
I'm going to sit here and eat my trail mix and smack
exactly.
my lips.
Exactly. Could you maybe stop eating long enough to tell us the deal and what you're offering?
I don't like
what
hearing.
Does that include exactly?
Yeah, what is this, what kind of deal am I getting for 10 grand? You stop eating.
See, I never that whole sequence, I never caught up with what was going on. And I was like, would you guys kick the old drunk out of the town meeting? Like, why is he even here? It really didn't work for me, that bit. Like, I was just mad at him for wasting their time.
He's totally the Obi-Wan though, right? I mean, he's like, no, that's not what you need to do.
Yeah.
What you need to do is put some chum in the water and then smell some Old Spice.
He's the Obi, but he's the jerky Obi-Wan from
hell.
You're
gonna need at least 4 yellow barrels.
Yeah, not 3, not 5, but 4. Yeah. All right, here's something about mom.
Michael, did you hear your father? Out of the water now! Now!
Good lord.
That was great because she was not worried until she saw that picture in the book.
Right, of the shark going through. Yeah. And it was a foreshadowing too.
Yeah, up till
foreshadowing of the shark ramming the side of the orca.
Until then, she was way chill with all of it. She's like, oh, they're fine, honey. Let them be out there. They're good. Don't worry about it. He looked like the worried one.
They can do that?
She's like, I seen a picture and now I'm freaked. In walks that guy.
Who are you? Matt Hooper. I'm from the Oceanographic Institute.
Oh, for Christ's sakes, you're the guy we called. I'm Brody.
Oh, I'm very glad to meet you.
Yeah, I'm glad to meet you,
Listen,
too.
Listen, I know you got a lot on your hands right now, but...
What can we do for you?
Well, I think the best thing for me to do is to see the remains of the first victim, the girl on the beach.
Yeah, that's going to go well for you.
Rob Schneider, ladies and gentlemen. He sounds exactly like
totally
Rob Schneider.
Does, yeah.
He totally
if there's
does.
A Jaws remake, we need Rob Schneider.
No, yes. No, please, no. I don't want any more Rob Schneider in my life. I really don't. I think I'm done with him. This old guy made me laugh.
When we get them silly bastards down in that rock pile, there'll be some fun. They'll wish their fathers had never met the mothers when they start taking their bottoms out and slamming into them rocks, boy.
Boy, could he have had more local, colloquial, like, mishmash of things to say? That was so dumb. But that was that part when they were all throwing chum and, like, wrecking into each other's boats, and that was awesome. I like that bit.
There's a lot of extraneous dialogue that I think, I don't know this, but I feel like that there was a lot of dialogue of the local people that Spielberg just said, just do whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cantaloupe, watermelon. But yeah, there's there's a lot of that.
Truth. Here's some angry acting.
Well, this is not a boat accident. It wasn't any propeller. It wasn't any coral reef. And it wasn't Jack the Ripper.
It was a shark.
Ooh. It was a shark.
You mean Jack the Ripper didn't do it?
No. It was a shark.
This totally made me want to watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. With next, was it like the next year with Richard Dreyfuss?
Was it the very next year? Oh, no.
Yeah,
no,
it was like either 76 or 77.
1 or 2 years later, yeah.
That's right.
I love that movie. I have that on Blu-ray. That's so excellent.
So that was before 1941. I've got wrong in my head. 41,
yeah, it was.
1941 seems like it was made before anything else, and I know that's not true, but it throws me to hear these other classics that are right before it. I don't know. Weird. Yeah, I think you're right. I'm not sure. Someone should look that up. As if we may
I'm
have
looking it up right now.
I'm looking it up. Look at my knots.
We have
slow internet.
Interconnected set of computers somewhere that ought to be able to tell us this. Well, let's figure it out.
So Jaws 75, Close Encounters 77. 1941, 79.
Yeah, right. There you go.
And then Raiders, 81.
Yeah, Raiders. And
then it gets interesting.
So Raiders comes after 41. That's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that's so weird. It feels wrong. And then Star Wars happened in 78. So all during this. That was 8. Wasn't it 8?
77, I believe, wasn't it?
No.
Wait, is Christmas 77?
Oh, you're right. That's why it's the 40th anniversary of Star Wars this year. You're right.
Right.
Yep, you're totally right. I knew that.
I knew that. Whatever.
Here's the reporter cracking me up. Here he is.
It's just the guys who caught the fish. Could you just open it up a little bit, please? I want to get a picture of the guy with the fish. Come on, guys. Come on, please. I need a picture for the paper. Can we get the size, please?
I was so annoyed.
I totally knew Scott would capture that. I knew it the whole time.
Guy with the fish.
Just the guy with the fish, please. Everyone get out of the way. It's like, dude, you're in the, you got the shit job at the paper. Here's this guy.
A what?
I'm just going to use that for the rest of my life.
A what?
Anyway, I don't know what even the reference was, but a what? Here's
I like that it was really short. It'll go in your montage of all your shortest sounds.
Yeah, I like my short sounds.
A what?
All right, here's one for this is the wife trying to figure out what Richard Dreyfuss does for a living.
My husband tells me urine sharks.
urine sharks.
She means means urine.
Yeah, urine sharks. She really meant shark urine is what she meant to say.
Yep.
Ibbot joke. I have I call it an Ibbot joke. I don't know. I was going to have some Ibbot joke, but I don't remember what it was, so here it is.
It's a killer. It's a man-eater.
Look. Oh, I don't know what it was. I had an idea there. It was some prom thing, some bullshit like that, and I blew it.
Oh, here she comes. Watch out, boys. She'll chew you up.
Chew you up.
I want those little paint-happy bastards.
Whoops, that's the wrong one. All right, my favorite line in the entire film. This is this right here.
I want those little paint-happy bastards caught and hung up by their Buster Browns.
What are their Buster Browns? Is that shoes?
Shoes.
Oh, yeah, that was big, dude.
Did you ever have Buster Brown shoes?
No, I thought it was a testicle reference or something.
No. Hang a beach boy with a silly dot. Like he looked like the Cracker Jack kid, actually, now that I think about it.
He did. That was a little bit late even for then. So even during the 70s, that was a late reference to.
If this had been made a little later, it would have been hung up by their underoos.
Yeah.
Right.
I really thought he meant his balls. I really did.
Gosh, no.
I really did. I thought Buster Browns. I'm like, oh, that's a 1970s reference to somebody's
like the equivalent of your short and curlies. Yeah. Buster Browns.
I want to hang it up by their Buster Browns. So now that's all I can think about.
You're hangy dangy. Come on.
Do not know what she said here. So you guys help me decipher. All right. So there's a weird whisper thing where she's mouthing to her husband on the beach and I still can't hear it. So here it is.
Yeah.
Okay. It's hard to hear.
No, I don't know either.
Do you remember what I'm talking about, though, the scene?
Totally, yeah. She mouths something to Scheider.
Yeah.
Play it again.
And I'm so annoyed. Okay, here it is. What?
It's when people are starting to go out into the water, right?
Yeah.
Yeah?
After the mayor says, everybody, or you guys go in there. Make sure, make people know it's safe. Then people start going in, and then she mouths something to Scheider.
I think she said, get me a Pepsi. I think that's what she said.
Just get me a cold Pepsi. Churros are outrageously expensive. All right, here's this kid. I just typed this kid.
He made me do it. He taught me to do it.
Oh, I know. It was making me laugh because the kid with the fake fin was just getting a mouthful of water the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
And every kid in this movie looked like the same kid.
They really did. It was weird.
I'm like, didn't he get eaten by a shark? Isn't his mother all pissed? Wait a minute. Oh, wasn't that his son? I got them all confused.
Oh, that's great.
Every one of those
kids. Poor Roy Scheider. Roy Scheider and his weird son. Yeah. That was a weird. The youngest one.
Yeah, that kid was creepy.
Right.
Yeah.
Complicated relationship.
He's a kid in a bucket too, because it felt like they were trying to set some kind of scary thing up with a little kid, and it never affected
the
little kid.
Now in part two, I'm trying to remember if it's the oldest son that joins in with him and carries on, or is it his youngest son?
It's his oldest son that does. His
oldest son, yeah.
I believe it's been a long time. And then in three, and in three, there's just none of these people. But then in the revenge, they have the mom come back and supposedly one of the sons. And then Mario Van Peebles is in revenge.
Right. Does he have a leather trench coat on? Is that?
I hope so.
Same movie.
only one can live, or however it goes. What was the deal in his? He was in the Highlander sequel, 3, I think. And it wasn't. What was the quote in Highlander? Only one can.
Only
there
one
can be only one.
There can be only one. One. Yeah. There you go. That was it. Bigger boat quote. So.
Bigger boat quote.
One of the most misquoted or misattributed quotes in the history of film. Everyone thinks that Richard Dreyfuss says this, and he does not say it. It's Roy Scheider. Here it is.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
It was also improv.
Yeah.
It was improv on the set.
The movie's just filled with bad sound design. You don't catch the first word.
Yeah.
And so I tried to figure out whether he says we're going to need a bigger boat or you're going to need a bigger boat.
No, let's hear it again.
I could never figure it out.
Let's hear it again.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
I think he says you're.
Oh, yeah. Does sound like you're, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think we can all agree there's going to be a bigger boat needed. How about that?
Yeah. Maybe something.
And he's absolutely right. It's one of the reasons it's so memorable is that he's correct. Yeah, they are going after a beast that can pull down this boat.
Yeah.
And he's the only one who seems to know it.
Yeah, it's a great line, and it was improv'd according to the trivia, and they kept it.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's kind of cool.
And you know, speaking of a really quick thing, we mentioned Bad Hat Harry at the beginning, the old man with the boobs, but we're gonna get
the way you said that so matter of factly,
so
dude.
So factual.
You're like, oh yes, we spoke of the man with the boobs that? Earlier. Bad Hat Harry, you may know.
That's amazing. What's his face's film company? Not J.J. Abrams, but the guy who did Usual Suspects.
Yeah. He also did X-Men. I can't think of his name.
Brian Singer.
Yeah, he's your X-Men guy.
That's some Bad Hat Harry.
Yeah, Bad Hat Harry is taken from the film, right? That was that's his thing.
That was the line that inspired the name of his company.
I want you to describe all weird things as matter of factly as you did that.
Okay, all right.
Like you know, remember the gentleman early on with the boobs? Well, he that's great.
It'll have to be when I'm not thinking about it, not expecting it.
So that's really good.
I'll make sure to do that.
All right, great. Here's noon. Something about noon feeding.
Oh, boys. I think he's come back for his noon feeding.
Okay, Rob Schneider.
It really does sound like Rob Schneider.
I almost said Roy Schneider.
It's freaking me out not seeing him, and
totally
I'm just hearing Rob Schneider.
Did not even think about that, but yeah.
I don't want to see a movie with Roy Scheider and Rob Schneider in the same movie.
Oh, well, that'd be
horrible.
You
never will.
I know you never will, but if I could, I wouldn't, or something like that. And then there's that laugh again. Okay, great. That's the end of those clips. That means it's time for the checklist. The Film Sack checklist goes like this. Quint, check. Not enough Quint, check. No more Quint, check.
That's exactly right.
That's pretty much the entire plot of the film. Star Trek connections. We have a few. Tommy Johnson was a musician, a tuba soloist.
Is there any other kind? Is there like a quartet of tubas?
Tuba
yes.
Well, sure. He's not in the film, but he did. He was part of the big part of the music and the stuff. He is. His work can be heard on soundtracks for most of the Star Trek films. So that guy got around. Ron Vito, underwater diver. He was in TOS, played recurring navigator Harrison in season one. And finally, Frank James Sparks. He was a stunt double for Richard Dreyfuss. Performed stunts in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. So,
which they used stunt doubles very sparingly in this film. It was so impressive how often you were seeing the actual actors sliding into each other and falling off of things and taking hits.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. 75.
I still don't understand how they safely did those boat dragging backward scenes.
They probably didn't.
Because that's what the actors were on there, and I'm like, how are they pulling this boat around?
They probably didn't. Those standards were different then, I think. I think that
I'm convinced that Richard Dreyfuss got hurt. Like, there were a couple of times when I'm like, ooh, wow, he took one.
Right.
What was his movie that was like this touchy-feely, feel-good teacher movie? What was it called?
Oh, Mr. Holland's Opus.
Mr. Holland's Opus. That's the last thing I think I've seen with him in it. Is he still doing shit, or what's his deal now? By the way, second Richard Dreyfuss movie for us. First one was the
Close
near
Close Encounters.
Near. I can't think of the movie.
I know is that it took a turn for me when he did the Krippendorf's Tribe.
Krippendorf's.
Oh, geez, right. The movie where he makes up a fake tribe.
That's bad.
Richard Dreyfuss is still an avid actor. He was he was in the Bernie Madoff TV miniseries as Bernie Madoff.
That's right. That's what I was thinking.
He was in Weeds. He was in Parenthood.
Yeah.
And he is currently working on a forthcoming TV series called Shots Fired.
All right. I like him a lot.
I want to know what movie Scott was talking about.
I'm talking about Stand By Me. Stand By Me.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, he was the narrating older version of Will Wheaton.
I've never had any friends like that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Does anybody anyway these days?
The Copinator. The Geminator.
Wait, he was in Piranha 3D?
Oh, shut
yes.
up. For real?
Yes, that's correct. I remember that.
Those piranha movies. Oh, my gosh.
This is the more modern one.
No, I know.
This is the one from 2010, which I saw multiple times in the theater because I had nothing better to do. It's a total cameo, and it's a movie filled with cameos, but it's a first top billing cameo.
Hold on a second. Are you telling me he's in that movie? Also had the fat kid from Stand By Me in it. But Slider's kid.
O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Or not O'Donnell.
Ben Rains, Elizabeth Shue, Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, but I didn't know it was a Stand By Me reunion of sorts. That's kind of cool.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Those movies are crazy. If you've not seen those modern piranha movies, oof, man.
But the old ones are even better.
They're better.
We're looking for a piranha with a 2-foot mouth span.
There's a scene, though, in that new one, newish one, the one before the latest one. I didn't see the newest one. But the first one, first modern remake, where a line of some sort, like a taut fishing line or something, gets yanked really hard and slices some bikini girl, like, right across the torso, but she's sort of still running and then stops and then it slides off.
And slides forward. We saw that. Yeah. That's the one we saw for this.
That's Piranha 3D.
We haven't seen this for this movie, have we?
Yeah, that's Ghost.
Yes.
No, we have not seen Piranha movies for this.
We totally watched a Piranha movie for Film Sack.
No, I
don't think so.
We've never watched Piranha movie. No, we watched Ghost Ship, didn't we? Did we watch that?
No, we didn't. But Scott just described a scene from Piranha 3D. I know because I've seen it so many times.
Did we not? And I could have sworn we watched a Piranha. There would be no other reason I'd watch a Piranha movie.
And the actress who gets sliced in half that you're talking about is Gianna Michaels. She's a porn star.
Oh, well, all right then. Nothing gets me going more than a sliced in half person.
You need to watch it with the commentary on. It's very you learn all sorts of things like that.
Brian, how did you see this without seeing it? I mean, there's no way we've seen it.
There'd be no other reason I would ever watch a Piranha 3D except for Film Sack.
You might have because it was ooh, I heard this one's really campy and crazy or something.
Maybe we talked about it on Film Sack and said, oh yeah, you got to watch it. And I think Tina and I sat through it. Maybe that's it.
I want to see one of the early ones. If we can get an early Piranha movie on the show, that'd be awesome.
So I've seen them all. The first one is actually
but you haven't seen Jaws until now.
Right. I've seen Piranhas.
I was trying to make a point earlier. I must have not made it well. I saw all these Piranha movies.
Yeah.
And so I didn't need to see Jaws.
Oh, right. You didn't say that.
I was terrified about fish in freaking water.
No, you totally explained it that way. Good point. I've never seen an original Piranha movie, so that would be a really fun thing on this show. And it's good really to do bad. It in the shadow of this because we can talk about influences and
for sure.
And
the weird thing is they made a sequel to Piranha 3D. It's called Piranha 3DD.
Yeah.
3DD.
Yeah.
Get it.
And
get it.
There was only one person in Piranha 3D who lives. That's Christopher Lloyd.
Oh my Lord.
Right. So Piranha 3DD has Christopher Lloyd and then a whole bunch of other sea actors like Gary Busey and David Hasselhoff.
Wow.
Yeah. Doesn't a piranha comes up through the toilet and goes up Christopher Lloyd, basically eats him from the inside, doesn't it? Is
but that what I'm thinking But he of? Survives.
Spoilers!
Right? Oh, come on. Can you spoil a piranha movie?
But he survives, right? He lives, though. So how did he live with a fish up his A?
No, I don't think he does. I think he comes out his mouth, if I remember correctly.
Oh,
he
goes my right through him, gosh. Basically. I haven't even seen this one. It's the first one I saw. The 3DD one I have not seen. So I can't speak.
Congratulations.
To it. Yeah.
So there's no Piranha movies currently streaming on Netflix, but I'd like to point out all the Sharknado movies are streaming, and there's others such as Three-Headed Shark Attack and Shark Lake and for some reason American Pie Presents the Naked Mile. I don't know why that's in the list. I don't know.
how fast was Piranha? Because the first Piranha was 1978, right the year after the amazing phenomenon that is Jaws, because it only took 11 million to make it and they made like 400 million or something. Joe Dante is our director on the first Piranha from 1978.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
I did not know that.
Joe Dante, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There is a movie streaming on Netflix that I refuse to watch, but that we really should, called Avalanche Sharks. It's about sharks that are swimming in snow on a mountain.
We are never, ever going to let you pick another movie for this show.
I've been done with those for a while.
Yeah, we are not watching that. There's no way.
Can you believe that exists?
Yes, because it's like, hey, Sharknado's cool. We could do something dumb, too, and then they make it.
Avalanche, shark.
Any natural disaster now, we can sharkify.
Yeah.
The tagline is, the snow will run red with blood.
That's gnarly.
Winter
man.
Is coming, and so are sharks.
Wow. That's freaking terrible. Look what you hath wrought, Steven Spielberg. All right, we're going to jump to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Jaws, a surprisingly exciting action film with only a smattering of Richard Dreyfuss and Robert Shaw drunkenly comparing their bodies on a boat.
I love when they were like rubbing their legs together and everything.
That was weird. I didn't feel comfortable with that at all.
That'll start a fishy fire if you're not careful. If you put those two hairy legs together. Brian Dunaway.
Jaws, like, how high are you right now, film sack? Now let's take off our shirts and go for a swim. No, you go, guys, go ahead. I'm going to just lay here and take a nap.
Yeah, that's the best part is the guy never quite made it to the water and never heard the screams. Idiot.
Pivot!
finally, Brian Ibbett.
Jaws, a mean and spiteful sea town, successfully attracts a great white shark by teasing it with a few women and children, and then cuts off its food supply and then further tortures it by feeding it about a third of a boat and a scuba tank.
True story.
Wait, quick clarification. The scuba tank was supposed to be full of fuel or just oxygen?
Just oxygen, just air.
All right. Even lamer. So lame.
Just compressed air tank.
Yeah. And no one on set said, hey, Spielberg, I don't think those explode. You should have brought like
watch out for those scuba tanks. They're going to explode if you
puff
on the runway.
All right. We're going to... look at this I got right here. This is alternate titles. Quint hates radios or ugliest catch ever. All right. Cast I wrote, not catch. Ugliest cast.
This is an ugly cast.
Nobody's pretty in this movie. Nobody.
Oh, yeah. That was typical of Spielberg back. So I couldn't figure out if there was no attractive people in the 70s or if Spielberg just always cast the people that were not necessarily...
Little
know,
of both.
CW material, you know what I'm saying?
That's the thing. I mean, maybe that adds to the realism if everybody doesn't look like they just walked off the set of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's a little of both, because they definitely were ugly in the 70s, I can confirm.
can confirm.
Got a quick email here from Shane, who wrote in. It says, hi, my name is Shane, I live in Oklahoma, where the wind rolls. Anyway, he says, I've been listening to your show for just over a year now. In my line of work, I have to endure a lot of windshield time, and I'm thankful that you guys are out there keeping me entertained. On to my point. Well, thank you, Shane, and we're glad that we're there for you. He says, several years ago, I started watching James Rolfe's Angry Video Game Nerd Show before it was callously ousted from YouTube and thankfully brought back. Through his YouTube channel, I was introduced to his annual Halloween movie review marathon, Monster Madness. This past Halloween's is the last he is planning to do, according to him. One review from this past year, however, was dedicated to the film Tusk, directed by Kevin Smith. Features Justin
Weird
Long,
stuff.
Potato Man, Haley Joel Osment. Potato Man, that's funny.
Potato Man?
Yeah, he called him Potato Man. A bit part for Johnny Depp and truly incredible performance by Michael Parks, among others, obviously. It's a strange little film that, while I understand others may not enjoy, I find highly entertaining and fairly disturbing. It is currently free on Amazon streaming, and I would love if you guys would try adding your masterful hands at sacking it. Love the show. New episodes can't arrive soon enough. Well, Shane, we have been asked about Tusk a lot.
Yeah,
and I feel like Tusk is like Kevin Smith's answer to a Human Centipede, kind of.
Right.
And I haven't seen it, but I know very little about it. But isn't the deal that he becomes like half walrus man or something? And
right. It's visually weird.
I've heard the name of the movie. I've never had any idea what it was about. Is that really what it's...
I thought that was what the deal was, is he starts turning him into a walrus or something, or yeah. It's okay. Yeah. So
if you want to see something in between Tusk and his normal stuff, go see Yoga Hosers on Netflix streaming right now.
How is that?
Yoga Hosers.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I hear it's
Johnny Depp's daughter and his daughter, right? Yeah.
I heard bad things about it. But if you say it's worth checking out.
Harley Quinn Smith.
Yeah. If you're saying it's okay,
weird.
Maybe I'll check it out.
I'm just
I wouldn't
saying,
say it's okay. I would say it's is fun to watch this weird thing going on. But yeah, I mean, Tusk may be a little bit too much for some people.
I need to get this out there, get this off my chest. I will watch anything with Ralph Garman in it. I don't care if Ralph Garman doesn't have any lines. I will watch it. Right. I don't know what it is about Ralph Garman. I think he's funny every time.
All right. Now, Ralph Garman, for those who don't know, is Ralph Joseph Garman, professionally as Ralph Garman. He is an American actor, comedian, radio host, best known for being the host of the Joe Schmo Show. For his work,
Joe Schmo,
his voice work on Family Guy, and he's 52 years old. He's known for some movies and some other things. Tusk, Yoga Hosers, Ted, Red State, Million Ways to Die in the West. A lot of Seth MacFarlane and Kevin Smith work. So there's that guy.
I don't know what's wrong with me.
I don't either. You're weird. You're weird. Well, there you go. That's your email. And Shane, thank you for that email. Maybe. Is the answer. We don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe eventually Tusk becomes so unavoidable that we just have to freaking do it. Part of the question with the movies we do is, what do we want to try to force a decent size of the audience to watch? Not force, but a lot of people watch these with us, right? They see them before it goes out. People were happy that we let them know that Jaws got bumped up a week because it was getting removed soon, so we wanted to make sure to get it. So they can watch it. So, are we asking people to watch Tusk? And if that's true, what does that mean? Like, is that a shitty thing?
We have a film sack formula.
Yeah.
No, we don't. But I feel like we've been slowly sort of circling a formula. Like, I feel like I've spent the last 7+ years studying Scott Johnson's expectations for this podcast. And I always try to describe it as a film that people have either seen or want to see. Like, it shouldn't be something that no one wants to see, but it needs to be something that's bad but earnest. Is kind of the
here's the deal. You get 6 points if you're a sci-fi, fantasy, or horror movie.
Yeah.
You get another 4 points if it features a well-known actor or well-known director. You lose points if it's something called Troll 2 or stars Jean-Claude Van Damme. If anything that's got 7 points or more is film sack material.
We
could write this down. It's a quantifiable formula.
That is great. But overall, like, I feel like when we're picking films, we kind of name some and we see how it feels. Like, I imagine Scott, like, reading our Slack channel and saying the name out loud. Amityville Horror. Yeah, I like that one. Yeah, I feel like that's a good one.
There's something, too, for the nostalgic stuff that we saw as kids and want to know if it still holds up. But there's also the things like, you know, oh, yeah, I remember wanting to see that when I was a kid and there being all this excitement over it, but never got to see it. And would it hold up in a day and age like today? I think there's, I really do think that there is maybe not a formula, but there are criteria that make up.
And sometimes it just feels right. You know, like sometimes you just get a feeling. We've gotten a feeling for this since 2009 when the show started, where a name will be brought up and we'll go, oh yeah, well, of course that's a movie we should do. Even if none of us have seen it, we just know that it's right. Occasionally one will come up and we'll go, I don't know. And then even some get kiboshed. But Tusk feels maybe like it's too new. It's Kevin Smith flipping people off a little bit. Like, there's something about it that doesn't
feel right.
It's
weird for weirdness sakes. I mean, he definitely did it on purpose.
Yeah.
You know,
make it weird. Which, and again, we did Sharknado as watch-throughs, as live commentaries.
Right.
And maybe that's how Tusk might work. I don't know. But, I don't know. It's a case by case. There's no one size fits all, but we have a general formula, I think.
And sometimes we just decide we don't want to watch a movie like Superman 3.
We're just mean.
Yeah, we bumped Superman 3 in favor of 4 because we just wanted to go to the true trash heap. We didn't want to watch the mediocre one.
We were already burnt out on Richard Pryor anyway, because we had just watched the other movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, isn't it amazing how critical condition may have ruined us forever watching another Richard Pryor movie?
It hurt. It took a ding. It did.
Well, there you have it then. Good stuff. Jaws, still a gaping mouth of goodness. You guys should watch that movie. It's pretty great. So do check it out. In the meantime, next week we're doing a commentary episode of Dunaway, remind me. It's
we're gonna watch some Ninja Turtles. Yeah, we're gonna watch some TV. Fox had this nice little idea that they were gonna do a live action Saban, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers crossover with the Turtles on Saturday morning TV, and it was spectacularly horrible.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch it.
We need to watch this in anticipation of the Power Rangers live action movie coming.
Yes.
Apparently, it's actually kind of good.
It looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Are there people in this on this Skype call right now that are anticipating that?
Yeah, actually, am
I the only one who's not?
Randy Jordan is anticipating Power Rangers.
I kind of am.
The person who's not, then.
I kind of am, but barely. Like, I'm with you, Ibbot. I'm curious about how this gets pulled off. Like, it's such a cheese bag show. The Pink Ranger, right. I had a little bit of a crush on, if I'm being honest. Back in the day, like there's a lot of things I could say about it, but it was never that this is quality television. And wow, isn't it great? A whole generation of primarily boys, let's face it, is being raised by this really awesome science fiction. That was never my mindset. But if the movie can actually, I don't know what it can do.
I saw bits and pieces of the Saban TV show and never really watched an entire episode. So, right. I mean,
well,
I
you're
get the
about
gist of it.
The experience.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well,
next week,
come on back for that. We got people traveling. That's why we're doing a commentary track. So watch for that. And we'll be back the very next week with Bedazzled, back on track with the order we were doing them in the first place. And a bunch more after that. It's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is the website. You can go there and be there and have things there. So go there and talk to us. It's great. Filmsack.com.
Be there.
You can leave us emails at filmsack@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter @FilmSack. It's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time. Nothing?
Bye bye.
I was waiting for the dog.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
It hurts. It hurts.
It hurts. Don't bite me. My feet. What am I going to do? Jeez.